Right. Dave Foreman passed away in September 2022. But he was one of the founders of Earth First, the radical ecological movement that's began work in the 1980s. It's believed that he coined the idea of Earth First in about 1980, and then became the driver behind the Earth First Journal. And of course, Earth First being a group that broke away from the kind of mainstream conservationist environmental movement to emphasize the idea of radical direct action. A lot of it sort of grabbed from the labor struggle, a lot of sort of ideas of monkey wrenching and sabotage and so forth, in service of protecting wilderness and animals. And so, of course, Earth First became very controversial in the 80s and 90s, started to get a lot of surveillance from the U.S. government, particularly FBI, for some of the kinds of tactics that were advocated by some sectors in Earth First. And Foreman was surveilled heavily by the FBI, of course, at the time, as quote-unquote, as they use that term, an eco-terrorist, or at least traveling in those circles, right, or were fellow travelers of folks like that. But he was a controversial figure. I want to note this in thinking about this, that, you know, he came from a very interesting background. He started off as a young person, as a conservative.
Yes.
A Goldwater conservative. Right. He was part of the Young Americans for Freedom, and then had this movement. Sort of, he moved into environmental politics, but always with a kind of, perhaps we might say, a conservative bent. In ways, he left Earth First, I think, in 1990, somewhere around there, when different members of Earth First started to think about the intersections of environmental work with social justice concerns, labor concerns, racial justice concerns, and he would have none of that. And so he broke from Earth First, I think, in the early 1990s. But he also had some controversial positions. He was working with the Sierra Club in the 1990s as on the board of directors, but he eventually broke away from the Sierra Club because he felt that they didn't seriously take into consideration the importance of having immigration restriction. So he very much believed in closed borders in order to protect the environment. He believed that immigrants and immigration was dangerous for animals and the environment. And he seems to have been, I in doing some research about this, I hadn't heard about this before, but I guess in 1986, he got a lot of flack, and rightly so, for some comments that he made about the Ethiopian hunger crisis that was going on at the time. It seems here that he advocated for not sending any emergency assistance to Ethiopia to handle the famine that was taking place there that was killing tens of thousands of people. He made some comment that it was important for nature to take care of her own or something or other, essentially suggesting that, you know, a lot of people need to die for the earth to heal itself. And this seems to be, he was part of, I guess, he seems to be part of that kind of Garrett Hardin brand of environmentalism that says that there's not enough resources for all of us. And if some human beings have to die in order to preserve nature, oh, well.
Yeah, lifeboat ethics.
Yeah, the lifeboat ethics stuff. And so
it seems to me it was a really naive conception of nature. Not only that, but it's funny for somebody who called himself biocentric. So life, all of life is in the center of his thinking and it has the greatest value. On the other hand, it seems like humans were always, in this conception, not a part of that, right? There's nature over here, and it literally means what's not human. And then there's human beings who are radically different, right? And of course, that whole idea of the separation of nature and humanity is part of the problem and has been critiqued really extensively since then. And in the time he was making those kinds of arguments about immigration and all that, the social justice critics were bringing this to his attention, saying, why are you considering that, like, the famine in Ethiopia had also political reasons. It was partly an artificial or human-made, right, famine, having to do with power and how it's structured, and its impact on local ecologies, like neoliberalism's impact on local ecologies. So there's all these ways he wasn't thinking about how ecological problems are really political problems that deeply involve the way that we envision ourselves, whether or not we consider ourselves as humans as part of nature, and what that means to be a part of nature, truly. So at least he did a service by provoking that kind of controversy within left circles, right?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, that whole sort of, like, the Earth First movement was really important. I mean, and people have acknowledged this, that a lot of people who were in the radical, the global justice movement, a lot of them sort of first got their kind of organizing and activist feet wet in environmental struggles here, and particularly in the Northwest, with groups that were inspired by Earth First, right? And later, that sort of idea of the emphasis on direct action was really important for a lot of folks in the global justice movement about upsetting and confronting and overturning the powers that be. You know, so we talk about what happened with Seattle in 1999. I think that there are some connections to be drawn to the environmental struggles of the early 90s. You know, the thinking about tactics and struggle and thinking about how to confront power. A lot of that stuff develops, I think, out of the Earth First movement in the 1980s. And, you know, and I think, like, the handbook of direct action that Earth First had was, I think, really influential for a lot of activists in thinking about what are the exact ways in which we go about preventing certain kinds of harms going on. You can see a lot of those kinds of tactics then being replicated in places like Genoa and Seattle and so forth. But you're right. I think that it was just this sort of what Foreman's kind of brand of thinking about this was much more tied to the kind of primitivist thinking in anarchist circles, right? That was very nihilistic about human beings and unknowingly, like, as you pointed out, unknowingly replicated this kind of humans as apart from nature attitude that seems to be part of the problem, the political problem of ecological crises, of not being able to understand holistically the different kinds of ways in which human beings and nature are intricately tied. Human beings are in nature. I mean, I think that this is why, Bookchin's work is so important at this time as a counterpose to some of this thinking, right? It's unfortunate that maybe Murray's thinking wasn't sort of bigger at this time to sort of help counter the ways in which this kind of hard binaries that Foreman was trying to promote in his work. Maybe this could have been short-circuited a little bit more.
And I think we haven't, I mean, I think there's a lot of room for developing this whole idea of what does it mean that humans are part of nature? What do we mean by nature? There's a whole set of assumptions that come with that word, you know, at least in Western philosophy, right? And a whole set of assumptions about, well, really, humans are the only rational animals. We're the only ones who, I mean, it goes so far as to the old critique of, you know, other animals are like machines. They don't have feelings. They don't have consciousness. So nature is this kind of, in a way, a dead zone. And then humans are the only place you could really find life worth valuing. So to say that humans are a part of nature, for some people, that's degrading humans because it's moving humans into that dead zone, right? And say, well, no, because we have freedom, we have choice, we can think things through and all that. And say, well, but if we're part of nature, maybe those capacities are inherent in nature. Maybe they're way more widespread, as we're finding scientifically, way more widespread in non-human nature than was originally thought, at least in the West.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
At least amongst non-indigenous peoples.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that there's a lot of really important work to be thought about here in terms of like indigenous ecological thinking. I know that Vandana Shiva has done a lot of these kinds of critiques this way too, thinking about the ways in which the West promotes, you know, she calls it the dead earth perspective.
Yeah.
That the earth is just kind of a, like you said, a dead zone or just as objects, and that the dynamic creativity is really of human rationality. And so she wants to promote a sort of a living kind of earth thinking that is much more closer to the idea that you were suggesting, that the earth is a living being. We are enmeshed in that. And to think about models that help us to think about that is really the important work that needs to be done. I would say that Dave Foreman really wasn't at the forefront of a lot of that work at that time.
But he provoked it.
He did provoke. I mean, yeah, it did provoke this discussion.
And it looks like he himself, in the last 10, 15 years of his life, was moving toward a more sophisticated understanding of the kinds of questions we're talking about.
Yeah.
So people change.